5, I would like to call the Economic Development Subcommittee May 1st, 2024 meeting to order. Note to all residents, all citizens are welcome to attend public meetings in person, to view the live meeting remotely. Citizens are encouraged to watch the live stream of Franklin Town Hall TV YouTube channel or the live broadcast on Comcast Channel 9, Verizon Channel 29.
Two votes?
Meetings are also archived by Franklin TV on the Franklin Town Hall TV YouTube channel and shown on repeat on Comcast Channel 9 and Verizon Channel 29 for those of you who missed the live meeting. Listen to the meeting remotely, citizens may call in this number, 1-929-205-6099. This will not permit participation in the meeting. To participate in the meeting remotely, citizens are able to join by Zoom webinar. The link is on the agenda on the town hall website and there's, yeah, okay, I think that's enough. Find the link there. All participants will be automatically muted upon joining the webinar. In order to speak, participants who have entered full name and email address need to select raise hand function to request to be unmuted. All speakers will be required to state their full name and street address before commenting. Okay, yeah. Got through that, awesome. Okay, so our agenda tonight, we have a grease trap bylaw. Jamie, do you want to start or do we go to Kathy?
Really quickly, Madam Chair, so just for the folks watching maybe from home, tonight the EDC is considering essentially a house cleaning item, establishing in town bylaw what has been town policy maybe for almost 20 years, which is a grease trap bylaw. And I'm gonna invite up Doug Martin, the Water Sewer Superintendent, and Kathy Liberty. Kathy, maybe you could just go really quickly through the Board of Health's position on the matter and then Doug can walk the group through the bylaw, which was our policy, but now we're proposing to put it into code. Kathy?
You want me to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To the mic.
Always love it.
You can come here or you can sit down if you want or.
Make yourself comfortable or whatever, Kathy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll come sit down.
Good job.
Yeah, come on, Doug.
Okay, great.
Nobody's watching, they're just listening.
And you know, like you're with friends here, right, so.
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
All right. So basically.
Could you put the microphone closer to you though, Kathy?
Oh, sure, yep, thank you.
Thank you.
So basically, when a food establishment is on septic, and that does occur from time to time, according to the 310 CMR 15.230, the Board of Health can enforce an exterior grease trap.
Okay.
So I believe it's a DPW's intention to mirror that in the town and also have the Board of Health be a designated. But when we're doing food establishment inspections, we can go in and look at pumping records and, you know, make sure the grease traps are being cleaned.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really that in a nutshell.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that, so the, so even if the business, so if the business is on a septic, then you want a grease trap before the water goes into the septic?
No, that's, there's an interior grease trap and an exterior grease trap.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's like, almost like a septic system, right? So the grease flows through and there's, you know, sludge and the water comes out.
Right.
It's just a process, so that you don't get sludge and grease into the main, DPW, you know, the sewer pipes.
The sewer pipes, so we want, we're protecting the infrastructure of the sewer.
Correct, yeah.
By doing that, okay.
And then I'll also add too that, like Jamie said, it's kind of a DPW policy. So anytime there was a permit pulled for like a new kitchen facility, correct? Or maybe there was a major upgrade to an existing facility, and an exterior grease trap was required. We just never had it in the bylaws. And because of that, there was no real method, means and methods for inspection. So that's kind of what this bylaw is trying to accomplish.
And I think that's important. I think some of the things that we've been trying to do is to make sure everybody knows what the process is.
Yeah.
And it's written there so anybody can find it.
Yeah.
So that they don't have to not know what's gonna happen, right? Is there anything else?
No, do you want me to go?
Just go through the bylaw real quick.
Mark?
Yeah.
Attorney Sorrell.
Yeah, so in the context of the existing bylaws, we have very detailed technical requirements for connections.
Okay.
But this was omitted, and so therefore we were in a position where when we wanted to insist upon this, it became a potential pushback. So this way, we've got a very detailed, comprehensive bylaw that now includes this as well, so there's no question it's a requirement. You have to comply in order to connect.
And then Gus can speak to this more, but I think plumbing code requires an internal, interior grease trap. Sorry.
Hello, Madam Chair, and
hi, Gus.
The rest of the EDC. Thank you. So that's an interesting statement, Doug, because the plumbing code just relaxed the interior requirements for a grease trap.
Okay.
So that.
Well, it's good timing.
Businesses have the option now. If they have an exterior, they don't need an interior.
Excellent. Wow.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good. That's great. That's great. That's like a compromise in and of itself.
And to be honest.
That sounds like something I would do.
And to be honest with you, I think that restaurant owners would agree there's a lot of maintenance with an interior.
Right.
Because you've got other things in the area of this nasty grease traps.
So it's like at the bottom of a sink, say, right? And it's in the kitchen. It's like nobody wants that there. Brutus, you want to come up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's also important to note that through this process, the interior grease traps really don't work that good. Doug can explain to you about the heat that's generated. But I also think it's economic. We need to know that we're not looking to retrofit people. We usually just get the new folks that are coming to town, that they're building something new, or they're doing a major rehab. So we know there's a lot of restaurants in town that don't have an exterior grease trap, but when they make that decision to do a certain upgrade, that's when we go ahead and force this.
It triggers the
yes.
change.
So it's not like, it's kind of like everything we do in town, like at the right time, we hit it, and it's, you know, we're not, because the new business come in, they know it's gonna be a new expense. So that's the time they do it, instead of going after someone that's been there for years.
Right.
So,
I got it.
So I'll let you know that.
Kobe?
Yeah, just trying to make sure I'm thinking through all the impacts of this. How much is an exterior grease trap, roughly? Do we know?
I think it depends on, yeah, Mike.
Depends on the size, location.
Yeah, the minimum size, all that's required through the Title V regulations that govern septic system design. We use the same requirements as those for the town sewer section, but they could run anywhere from $20,000 to $30,000 or $40,000. It can get very expensive very fast. It's a minimum 1,000-gallon tank that goes outside of a building. It's tied in to pick up just the kitchen flows before those flows go into the town sewer system. So it's an important maintenance piece to protect the town sewers, but it does get very expensive. And as Brutus had mentioned, usually we don't have people just anybody who already has an ongoing business, they're not grandfathered in, but we won't necessarily require them to do one until there is a major renovation, mm-hmm. or if there's a change of ownership in the facility also. That's also one of the triggers under the new bylaw. So if there's a change of ownership, they'll also have to install a new grease trap. So there are a number of them in town, but still a few older facilities that don't have them at all.
Okay, and what's the footprint that's required? Like, are there older facilities in town that struggle to even find the footprint, like, if you know, during a change in ownership?
It could be. One of the recent ones was over by where Franklin Nutrition was.
Yeah.
They put one in there to service that facility and the Chinese food restaurant. We worked with the landlord, and they were able to tie both units into that one grease trap in the back. It was a small area, but they were able to work both businesses together to get those both combined there. Some properties, it might be a little difficult. We'd have to look at that on a case-by-case basis, but 1,000-gallon tank, I'd say maybe, maybe like 6 to 8 feet wide, maybe 10 feet long, give or take. Like a traditional septic tank.
Yeah, and it's all buried. So the only thing you see above ground is the manhole cover.
Okay.
I was gonna ask if you could park on it and can you use the space?
Generally, if it's designed for parking, sure, you could.
Okay. Absolutely.
Is that what you're gonna ask?
No.
No, okay. Sorry, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, sorry, I was just going to add that when the alumni changed hands and they took the new restaurant across the street, they put one in the front parking lot there too. So there's one there. They just had that, you know, maybe about a year or so ago when they changed.
Okay.
So it's in a parking lot. Can go in the grass area, parking lot, doesn't matter. Wherever the plumbing's going to work out, where they tie in the sewer lines.
Okay.
And so by practice, we've been asking, we just hadn't, we realized that we didn't have it in statute or in bylaw.
We've always treated it as a DPW policy that anytime we sign off on a building permit that involved a commercial kitchen, we would require that if they were on town sewer.
I think the Board of Health in partnership has always been the same thing. Because it's both departments kind of oversee and have some level of guidance over this issue.
Do we have some sense of how common this is as a practice or policy?
As far as other towns?
As far as other towns.
Yeah. Yes, it's pretty common. We actually, when we were putting this together,
we talked to Bellingham, Ellis, Medway. They all have some sort of exterior grease trap bylaw. So we kind of took some of that language and brought it together.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, I think, right, my only fear would you know, be unnecessary stressors on businesses. Seems like, Franklin Nutrition ended up being a great example of maybe the most difficult place to put one, and we were able to get it done. You know, it's still limited business, and I think that there are still impacts, but it seems doable. Yeah.
Jamie, Madam Chair, quickly, actually, that was a really big success story.
Seemed like it, yeah.
The landlord at the time, the ownership changed, but the landlord was actually going to stick the bill with the new tenant.
Right.
And we've done a really good job as a team for a long time, kind of working as a team, and and Kathy's been great at this, Gus, everybody, Bruce. We go up and we meet with the owners, and that was one where actually the cost got split up, so not one tenant was getting kind of hit with a big bill, because it is a capital improvement for the parcel.
Right.
And so the owner of the parcel actually chipped in on that, but only after we got involved. The only other thing I would add, Councilor Frangillo, is kind of the issue around almost at this point, like almost equity in the town too, because the town's been doing this for like two decades. And so now most of the downtown commercial businesses and an overwhelming majority of a lot of the new buildings, if not most of them or all of them, all have them. So it almost to stop that would almost mean like everybody had to do it for 20 years, and now some people wouldn't do it, right? So it's almost like an inverse inequity to the investments that a lot of restaurants have made, which is good for the whole system. But this kind of basically just put what we're doing in policy and code.
Again, the only thing I'm thinking through in this, I very much appreciate the intention. I think that this is all great. I just want to make sure that we're thinking through really start downtown historic buildings where we want to welcome commercial activity. Most importantly, we want to welcome it there and encourage it there. Is such a policy going to be restrictive or even prohibitive of new commercial operations happening within the historic footprint of the downtown? And I'm getting some sense that's not the case.
So
that's my only.
Most of the businesses downtown.
I'm not too worried about the shed.
Yeah, sure. Most of the downtown have them now. They've conformed over the long time. Mike can speak specifically. I think Depot Plaza still needs one.
With a former office.
Former office. But there's a great example with change of ownership, actually installing a grease trap on that property would invite a lot of opportunity too, because then you really could do a restaurant, what people keep saying is ice cream, Froyo, whatever people envision, breakfast. So if you were to rehab that parcel and you put it in grease trap, that actually brings opportunity in.
Yeah, just if it prevents the rehab from happening in the first place, that would be the fear. But I guess we're talking 2040 within the sale of a multi-million dollar property,
yeah.
That's probably.
Right.
It probably comes and it increases the value of the business.
Right. Increases the value of the parcel for sure.
If I may, as an example, when Acapulco's moved to Union Street, they added one over to that facility.
Right.
Teddy Gallagher's downtown, when they moved in, they actually put one in over there too. So
okay.
There's one in that building.
Okay.
The coffee.
a home for our.
Birchwood?
Birchwood.
Intermission?
Intermission.
They have, they're tied into that too, so, yeah. So there are ways to find, make it work.
Santa Fe Burrito does, they have one.
Okay, great.
Franklin has a pizza.
Franklin has a pizza.
They just reopened that one now.
Okay, yeah, that'd help, yeah.
Mark, you got a comment on this?
Yeah, the countervailing public policy thing, which was alluded to, was protection of our sewer system because of what can happen. If we don't have it, there was a prior establishment that doesn't exist anymore, but they had a dispute between who was responsible, the tenant and the landlord, it wasn't getting done. And not only did it back up repeatedly, but it was a wetland area to boot. So it caused our sewer main to back up periodically and also to contaminate a wetland area because, as we know, coincidentally, a lot of the sewer mains run through wetland areas. So there are public issues at risk if you don't do it.
Yeah.
Is that good?
Cool.
Brian?
Could I just speak to the violation part of this for a second?
Absolutely. We didn't give Doug a chance to like tell us about it. But
oh, okay. No, that's the only those my others, but good.
But if you
no.
We'll let Doug go through the bylaw quickly,
okay.
And then,
yep.
and then.
Thank you.
Yep. All right, for you, Madam Chair, the first part of the section kind of goes over some definitions. You know, what is a commercial kitchen? What is a food service establishment? What exactly is an exterior grease trap? What FOG is? So fats, oil, and greases, that's the acronym FOG. We talk about in here septetoller. So that would be the person that would come clean mm-hmm. the exterior grease trap, who the town agent is. And then the next section goes into exterior grease traps when they're required, how they need to be sized. Like Mike said, it's based on Title V regulations. And then reporting requirements. So that was something that was missing kind of from before is these exterior grease traps would go in, but we had no idea if they were in service, who was pumping them out and that kind of stuff. So we've established some reporting requirements that will happen through when businesses renew their permits with the Board of Health. They'll have to upload some documentation of, you know, we had this septetoller, pump it out, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. So that'll be helpful. Kind of goes over the inspection requirements, different things that they need to do, and then the violations, as Councillor Chandler was talking about. So the first thing, like any violation, is a written notice. So we notice that you're not inspecting or there's problems and it's not working correctly, we'll give you a written notice and a time period to correct that deficiency. And then obviously, if it goes unrecognized or unfixed, then there's a statute of violations and fines that we, that Mark can speak to this better, that we have the right to fine an individual. Or the business or whoever it is. So that's it in a nutshell. It's pretty straightforward. Any other questions?
So it say how long between the violations you allow before there's a second violation?
Each day is a violation.
Each day?
Each
okay.
day.
All right, thank you, Mark. Do you have anything else to add, Attorney Sorrell?
On the violations, those are statute, right? The numbers?
No, but the state caps what you can have for maximum fine for a local bylaw, which is $300. This progressive and each day being a separate offense is pretty consistent throughout the bylaw, the rest of our bylaws.
Councilor Chandler, do you have any questions?
That was an excellent first question by you. I appreciate that. So first, Director of Public Works, you always are the first man for the violations, I'd say.
Glad my name is finally left out.
I know, it is. The water police. Okay, so it's you and obviously Kathleen are the main two that would give the violations.
Correct, and I think like anything else, it's, you know, I always make the joke, I hate being the water police, the snow police, and everything else. You know, the cases that's come up, it, to us, it's not really about the violation. When we get there, it's about fixing the problem. And usually the fix of the problem is empty, or they're, you know, they're doing something else, or maybe it's not designed right. So that's usually what we try to do. I mean, very rarely do we actually try to find somebody that you just keep going after. We're not looking to get someone $300 a day. We just want to fix the problem. The other thing that's unique in these systems, for the most part, is the grease traps on the property and the sewer line, you know, from the sewer line to the property, like on a house or a restaurant, all the way to the street. So if the system's not working, it's going to back up on private property. Mm. You follow me? So that doesn't necessarily make it out to our system. You know, we sometimes it does, there are bypasses over, we can see them with camera, and for the most part, if the system does fail, it's going to fail on their property. And if they have grease on their property, they want to get cleaned up because obviously someone's going to see it. So they work with us. The one case that Mark was talking about was a very unique situation, and what happened was it kept overflowing, and then it kept going into the wetland adjacent. So I don't think we need to bring the property up.
Yeah.
And we actually ended up working with that renter because the owner was kind of difficult. But we actually did a modification for a really safe interior grease trap that was actually down in the basement because of the access out there was very difficult because of the high water table and all these other things that were going on. So once again, we're just trying to work with the folks. We're just trying to protect the system for all the repairs we're trying to do.
Right.
It's not about the fines, Mr. Chairman.
Right, because I also see it's not criminal.
Correct.
So you,
right.
I mean, I know you actually never really get the police involved in.
No.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's not going to be men with.
Well, the other thing is, you got a big nut to crack, as they've indicated, to put the system in. If you've got fines piling up, that gives you some encouragement. You can't just sit there and disregard it because it's going to cost you, and you're still going to be forced to do it because there's the option to go to court to enforce the bylaw if need be.
And that was my last question. It just showed the third violation, and I didn't know if they could actually be shut down after the third violation. Well, we have to just
he doesn't court. Have authority, whether the Board of Health does on a separate basis, I don't know.
Major liberty.
Okay, so we would do
it. It would depend on the severity of the problem. For us to shut a food establishment down, right?
Yeah.
And like Buddha said, we like to work with our food establishment, the people, and work with them and try to get them to comply. I also want to add, too, we're out there twice a year as a rule, and if we would look at the logs and the records to make sure that it is being cleaned up properly, and if it's not, then that would go on our violation form as well. So when we do a re-inspection, usually everything gets done. So.
Okay, so last question. We do the court route first before there's any shutting of any doors.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Councilor Chamberlain. Is there any other comments? No? No. I think this is, you know, like we went to the, I saw the biggest grease trap ever, I think, in the Charles River waste treatment plant down in the basement. And Councilor Sheridan and I went down with Doug, right? We went down and we saw the big grease trap there. That was very interesting. So I just want to. So you inspect the restaurants twice a year.
Yes.
Kathy, right? And then, how often would they have to clean out the grease trap? Is that every 2 years or is it every year?
I think the bylaw says every 3 months.
Every 3 months? Is that what it says? Looking for it, but
at least every 3 months or a frequency deemed necessary to prevent any potential waste.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think what we're looking, it really depends on the size and of the business. So like a smaller business is not going to need as much as versus like a larger, like a, I don't know, like the Railery or something like that.
Right.
Where they got more, you know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you. Interesting. I'm all for putting processes in place where people, everyone will know what's expected of them. And it makes it easier for everybody to do their job and to, you know, run their business. And I think if we're already doing this, then we should just do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I would take a motion. We're going to move this to the town council, or what are we going to do?
That's right, Madam Chair. You would recommend this to the town council, and then this one doesn't need to go to the planning board, so the council will just go through its own readings probably in June.
Okay.
It'll be the one in June. It'll be ready for probably July 1.
All right. I would take a motion to move this to the full council.
So moved.
Yeah, second. I thought he was giving the motion.
Yeah.
Well, I mean that's the motion, right? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. It moves to the town council. Thank you all so much.
Your
staff, wonderful staff that we have. Thanks for bringing this up to us. And with that, that's it, right? That was our agenda for tonight. Thank
motion
you.
Adjourned.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Good night. Thanks for watching.
Thank you, everybody.
Recording stopped.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.